Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. You have heard me talk about the Fear-Free Initiative now for several years, and I love the idea from the very beginning. When Dr. Marty Becker said, you know, on veterinary visits, we have to minimize or even prevent fear, anxiety, and stress in our pets. Boy, has that taken off. I mean, it's taken off to the extent that now dog trainers can be certified as fear-free. Pet sitters, dog groomers, and cat groomers can be certified as fear-free as well. About every veterinary school in America is certified or certifying their students to be fear-free. I mean, it's taken off like no initiative ever before that I've seen in veterinary medicine. I've been doing this several decades at this point. It's been transformative in so many different ways. But now there's a website for all of you. It's called Fear-Free Happy Homes. It's for pet parents. About just general information, you know, and this is so important because there's so much misinformation regarding our pets. And I will talk about this website and much more regarding Fear-Free with veterinary behaviorist Dr. Ken Martin. But first, internationally renowned expert on parasites. One day I want to talk to you about why you chose that for a living, Dr. Mike Dryden, professor, let me do that again because I should say distinguished professor emeritus, Kansas State University College of Veterinary Medicine. You teach veterinarians not only all over the country, but all over the world about parasites. You've been doing it for a very long time. I want to talk about one in particular, because we'll get to this in a second, a study that was done right here in Chicago having to do with heartworm disease. But let's back it up one step. For those who don't know, what is heartworm disease? I suppose one more reason why we should go when we see a mosquito.
Absolutely. So heartworms are very large worms. They can be up to 10 to 12 inches long that reside within the pulmonary arteries and right heart of your dog and even cats, for that matter. Mm-hmm. Having a large worm or number of worms in that basically location in the body produces a lot of disruption of blood flow into the heart and into the lungs and produces over time congestive heart failure of these dogs and severe disease in cats as well. In fact, can kill them.
So in cats, just FYI, the treatment is there is no treatment.
There is no treatment in cats.
Right, right. In dogs, there is a treatment, but it's really expensive. And in addition, even when treated and the dog is okay, first of all, the dog has to go through the treatment, which is no fun. But beyond that, the dog is going to have, any dog is going to have permanent damage as a result of that heartworm the dog suffered.
Absolutely. We actually know that even if you kill those worms in that dog will have permanent pulmonary and lung tissue damage probably for the rest of its life. Yeah. Whatever that dog would have been, it will never be that.
Yeah. And this doesn't mean, friends, you should not rescue dogs, because I want to make this clear. You should not rescue dogs that have heartworm and are undergoing treatment, and either you're paying for that, maybe the animal shelter or rescue is paying for that. That's wonderful. You're saving a life. It's just the reality is what we're talking about here.
Yeah, the reality is that physically that dog will never have been what it could have been. Now, you may not know that because you've adopted this dog, so you don't know what physically it might have become. But clearly, yes, yeah, adopt that dog, put it through the treatment, and give that dog a great home the rest of its life. Absolutely.
Yeah, and certainly you'll have a loving dog and all of that. But heartworm can be prevented.
Yes, it can.
Tell me about the study in Chicago.
Yes, there was a really interesting study that just got published very recently in the Chicago area. And what they did is this spanned looking at heartworm in coyotes from 2001 through 2016.
Explain why that would be of interest when we have a little shih tzu in our house.
Well, it actually looking at the coyote is a very, very important thing when it comes to heartworm. Because in North America, the coyote is our reservoir for heartworm. And depending on where you're at, the incidence in coyotes can be as low as maybe 5 to 8%, like in some of the more arid parts of the United States, like in Kansas, actually. And then you get in areas like parts of, you know, Alabama, Mississippi, Florida, even some of the areas of California, the incidence can be 60, 80% in coyotes. So no matter what we do in our dog population, heartworm will always be here because we have a reservoir in the coyote. And we have over 25 different species of mosquitoes in the United States that can actually transmit heartworm from the coyote to your dog.
All right. And let's not get rid of the coyotes because of this either, because there are people that will say that, believe it or not. That really wouldn't even solve the problem. No. So tell me what was done in Chicago.
So what they did is they live trapped and then released these coyotes from 2001 to 2016, and they looked for the presence of heartworm in these coyotes with blood tests, okay, to make sure the coyotes were heartworm positive. And they did this over time to see where the incidence in coyotes was increasing over time. And also they wanted to look at from a more suburban or rural area of Chicago down to the metropolitan area to see if there was a difference in heartworm in those coyotes as you move from one part of Chicago to the other.
That's fascinating. So what did they find?
Well, it was remarkable. First of all, over time, heartworm did increase in these coyotes. And in fact, towards the end of the study, the incidence of these coyotes got up to 66% of the coyotes were infected at the end of the study, and one time was as low as 7%.
Wow.
Which was interesting because we've seen in dogs, heartworm has increased over the last 20 to 25 years as well. So this actually mirrored what we're seeing in the dogs. Now, obviously, dogs, two-thirds of our dogs don't have heartworm. We understand that. But coyotes are not protected, and they have a very high incidence. But think about that. In the metropolitan Chicago area, in 2016, two-thirds of all the coyotes running around had heartworm.
And you don't have to worry about that personally, friends, because we're not going to get heartworm from coyotes.
No, but our dogs can.
Exactly. Exactly right. So, and the mosquitoes, well, there are lots of them, too, as weather is changing. Some even have said, with our damp weather for most of the past 10 years in Chicago, combined with the fact that overall temperatures are warmer. Yep. Tom Skilling has told us that. That's our famous, very famous meteorologist in Chicago. So if that's all true, and it is, more mosquitoes. So that's kind of a perfect storm, but a perfect reason to protect our dogs.
Yes, absolutely. Well, the other interesting part of this study was, as you move from the suburbs to metropolitan Chicago, they actually found as you went downtown,
more.
There were more heartworms in the coyotes, which was crazy. And they looked at the seasonality of heartworm transmission. Heartworm transmission season in downtown Chicago was a couple months longer than in the suburbs.
You know why I'm not surprised? As a Chicagoan, it's warmer in the city.
Yes, it is. The urban heat island effect.
And there's more water and more mosquitoes as well.
Yeah, so they documented what we've known for years. It's called the urban heat island effect.
There you go, yeah.
When you're downtown metropolitan area, it's warmer than in the suburbs.
Yes.
So think about this. The coyotes in downtown Chicago have more heartworm, and the heartworm transmission season is longer than if you live in the suburbs. So your little dog that lives in downtown Chicago in a high-rise apartment needs to have longer and better protection than a dog in the suburbs that's in the backyard.
Were you surprised by that, Ethan?
I actually really wasn't, but to have the data
was
really remarkable to finally get this data.
Oh, you're so excited. I've never seen you so excited.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to have data to substantiate things we've often thought about.
So are they going to do a similar study in San Diego? Because sea lions there can be a reservoir, right?
Yeah, it'd be nice if they did. But my guess is this is probably going to relate to about any place we deal with the United States when we have coyotes in major metropolitan areas.
Okay, so let's talk about the importance of protection. First of all, you can do it. It's available. Just talk to your veterinarian. It's kind of that simple, isn't it?
It really is very simple. We have once a month oral medications. We even have injections that last 6 months or a year today. So there are so many ways to protect our dogs from a horrible 8 to 10 to 12 inch long worm living in their pulmonary arteries that can ultimately kill them. So why are we not protecting them with very effective, very safe medications today?
And I think one of the reasons why people don't do it, certainly for some it's expense, but for one more reason is it's not going to happen to me.
Yeah, and that's a problem. You need to recognize that the numbers aren't large.
It happens to somebody, though.
It does. So about 1.5% of the dogs in the United States get heartworm on an annual basis. And you go, that's not a lot of dogs. Yes, it is. Because we're talking in excess of 70-plus million dogs. So what we're talking about is in excess of a million dogs getting heartworm in the United States every year. If that was humans, this would be a catastrophic news story every day that over a million humans, but in this case, dogs are getting heartworm every year in the United States. That's horrible. And this is 100% preventable.
That's the thing. So let's prevent it. Dr. Dryden, always, always good to talk to you. Thank you so much for talking about Chicago and our coyotes.
I'm glad I could provide the information today.
Dr. Ken Martin is a board-certified veterinary behaviorist who is a part of this initiative called Fear Free. You were there from pretty much day one, Dr. Martin.
Yes, I was. Fear Free is one of the forefront organizations to change the way we deal with pets.
And the idea is to minimize fear, anxiety, and stress before going to the veterinarian, in part at the veterinary clinic as well, at home. I want to go back to before going to the veterinarian. A lot to talk about here because the presumption is, my pet's okay at going to the veterinarian. Maybe you have, like you do now, a puppy, a young dog, or a kitten, and it's okay. All it takes is one time for it not to be okay, and then you have an issue. Is it better to get ahead of a problem before it becomes a problem?
Prevention's always easier than treatment. And what we have to realize is that a lot of pets, whether we have a dog or whether we have a cat, they show fear, anxiety, and stress prior to going to the veterinary hospital. The cat, you bring out the cat carrier, and most cats, the only time we put them in the carrier or you put them in the car is when they're going to go to the hospital. And so that ends up being predictive of a negative experience, essentially.
But even if the pet is okay with it, not thrilled about it, but okay with it, okay with the carrier if it's a cat that needs to go into a carrier. If it's a dog, okay with the car ride, happy about the car ride, then understanding, oh, no, I'm at the vet clinic, but okay with it. Can we do better than that? And are there ways to help that pet along even before you get into the car?
We sure can. And a lot of pet owners will think, yes, their pet is just okay with it. But a lot of pet owners aren't able to identify fear, anxiety, and stress in their pets. And so there are a lot of things that we can do preventative-wise to help our pets to be less stressed with getting in the carrier, less stressed with going on the car ride, arriving into the veterinary hospital. And it's very, very common for pet owners to have their pets think, well, they do fine when they're at the clinic. And one thing that we can do, and one thing that we should consider doing for a majority of our patients is nutritional supplements that reduce fear, anxiety, and stress, or even pharmaceutical medications that are extremely safe that can reduce fear, anxiety, and stress when our pets are in the hospital to make it a pleasant experience.
Because I'll throw one more in there, pheromones.
Yeah,
so pheromones. So you're talking about like calming care from Purina, for example, I presume.
Yep.
And you're also talking about, for some pets, actually medications or nutraceuticals, which are not nutritional supplements, they're not pharmaceuticals, it's kind of a hybrid in the middle of all that. All of these things, depending on what your veterinarian recommends, to get ahead of what might be a potential downside, and it seems there's no downside at all to using these things.
No, there aren't. There are a lot of natural products that are out there that can actually help to calm pets, to take away stress, and just to make it a much more pleasant experience. So we have natural products that we can use, and we really should think about using some of these natural products really as preventatives for patients that are even fine or okay, because it depends on what happens in the hospital. There are a lot of things we do to pets in the hospital that are very unpleasant. We have to take their temperature. We do a physical exam. They may have to get vaccines. There are things that you or I might get anxious to go and see our doctor and have done. And
the difference is we have an explanation, and no one's explaining to the pet exactly why this is going on.
Very true. I mean, our motives are appropriate. We want to help the pet, but the pet doesn't understand that. And so there are multiple things that we can do to help them. And nutritional supplements are one. But sometimes when fear, anxiety, and stress is more significant, then we need to think about other pharmaceutical-type medications to try to help them. And there are numerous options available. So the best thing that a pet owner can do is talk to their veterinarian about, you know, I'm concerned about my pet's health. I'm concerned also about my pet's behavior, its emotional well-being, and what are things I can do to make it the best experience possible for my pet, but also for me as the pet owner. Because when pet owners are anxious about bringing their pet into the hospital, the pets don't get the best care.
And the pets pick up on that stress.
They certainly
and
do.
It becomes a snowball effect, kind of, right? You know, the pet is more stressed, the owner's more stressed, the owner's more stressed, the pet is more stressed, and it kind of builds upon itself. And also, we have these tools available. So when you first started veterinary medicine, and it wasn't that long ago, you're a young guy, but even when you first started, these tools weren't around. We have them. Should the culture change? So now we understand, okay, we've got these tools. Let's make sure that the puppy starts off right.
The reality is a majority of us in veterinary school and veterinary technology school, we did not have a lot of behavioral experience, a lot of behavioral education years ago. And there weren't as many things and treatments that were available. But now there are numerous. I mean, too numerous to count different things that we can do. And so it really is transformative to veterinary medicine that ask your veterinarian. There are things that can be done to help your pet to have a better experience at the hospital. And so that's the biggest thing. The other is treats. A lot of times pet owners aren't giving treats to their pets because they think they're fine, they're okay. But treats can actually prevent fear, anxiety, and stress. And so we really should be using food and have clients bring their pet with its favorite treats, bring their pet with its favorite toys, and use those things in the veterinary hospital to make it a pleasant experience. It just makes it so much better. And again, I can't say prevention is easier than treatment.
And there he said it, Dr. Ken Martin. By the way, co-author with his wife, Debbie Martin, of Puppies Start Right, which is what we're talking about. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Again, that website is fearfreehappyhomes.com. In the radio biz, they call when you're about to promote something that's coming up. Coming up next, we talk. That's called a tease. And I told my producer, Matt, that I'm going to tease rabbits. And he said, well, Steve, you ought not do that. That's cruel. But I'm going to be talking about rabbits and Easter. Yes, it is still a thing. I'm sick of it, but it still is. That means I need to talk about it. And I will do that next. Happy Easter, everybody. You know, I've been doing this for years, where way back when, in that way back machine, I was on frequently at this time of year with Steve King and Johnny Putman. And they would have me on talking about this topic. And then the next year, they'd have me on talking about this topic. Then maybe I do a podcast on it, or I do one of my shows about it. I still need to talk about this topic. For some reason, people are still going out, maybe today even, Easter Sunday, look for a pet store or somebody, some way, somehow, that's selling rabbits. Or go to an animal shelter, like Red Door Animal Shelter, that kind of specializes in rabbits. Or goes to Anti-Cruelty Society, they have rabbits very often, or even Animal Care and Control. And say, and I want you to go to shelters to adopt rabbits, but say, today on Easter, because my kids want a rabbit. And somehow the association is made between rabbits and Easter. I've written in detail about how we think that association started, but it's not a religious thing, incidentally, by any stretch of the imagination. Now, rabbits are a wonderful pet. So it goes like this. Cats, actually, there are more cats than dogs in America. Cats are man's best friend in a way. More cats than any other pet, then dogs, and then rabbits, believe it or not. So there's a big drop after dogs to rabbits, but still, rabbits can be wonderful companions. They really can. But you have to appreciate rabbits for who they are. They're not as effusive as dogs and may not be as effusive as many cats. Does that mean they don't bond with us? Of course, that's not the case. They do very much bond with us. They're domestic rabbits. They're called that because they are domestic. They need what they need. And I'm not going to stand here and tell you sort of rabbit 101, but they need care. I mean, they're a pet that's going to live a while. And they need proper nutrition. They need appropriate veterinary care, by the way. And they need an appropriate place to live, if you will. Sort of a hutch in your house. And if there's a lot of activity going around, like young kids saying, I want the rabbits, I want rabbits, because they saw a cartoon for Easter with rabbits, actually, they don't mix well with young kids. Young kids are unpredictable sometimes in their movements. They do make a lot of noise at times, and none of that rabbits appreciate. So actually, and they don't like to be carried around. In fact, what's a fear of heights? Hydrophobia. I don't think that's it. But whatever a fear of heights is, rabbits have it. They actually don't like to be carried around. They're not a good pet for young kids, but a great pet when you do your research. I mentioned the animal shelters, Red Door Animal Shelter, the Anti-Cruelty Society of Chicago, Chicago Animal Care and Control, and on occasion others that do periodically have rabbits. Rescue a rabbit today, but do your homework first. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, right here on WGN.